91.3 FM CJTR Regina Community Radio. Thanks for their generous support. Mysteria Gift and Design Gallery, 2706 13th Avenue. The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily shared by Radius Communications Incorporated, operators of 91.3 FM CJTR.
When you're growing up in a small town.
Well, it's Wednesday morning, and I guess it's time for Untitled, your weekly intervention or gateway or doorway or whatever sort of way you want to use into art exhibitions that are happening around Regina. I am your host, Felipe Diaz, and joining me as always is Margaret Basai. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Phil.
And what are we going to talk about today?
Well, it's another trip to the Rosemont Art Gallery, which is part of the Neil Balkwell Center on 15th and Elphinstone, roughly. And there's quite a few good artists showing through the Rosemont this month. I mean, Chris Riffle's got some paintings up at the Cathedral Freehouse, and John Reichart has a sculpture that's about to go up in the park there, and he's got a bunch of would you call them sketches or paintings up on the hallway, sort of prefacing the sculpture?
I think he calls them paintings.
Yeah. So. Well, they are done on, you know, pieces of plywood, so I guess it's hard to think of them as sketches, but...
Well, they sort of serve both purposes. I mean, you can sort of... he has a large outdoor installation going into Les Sherman Park, and it's a steel sculptural piece with two parts to it. One is...
a doorway, and the other's a silhouette?
Yeah, something like that. And so... and you can see one from the other, and although they're quite a distance away. Anyway, you can sort of imagine the piece... From the paintings that are up in the Neil Balkwell, so you get a sense of what it actually looks, what you're actually going to see in the park when it's there.
Yeah, and I thought that was quite fun. And then, of course, in the gallery space itself, we have an installation by Ryan Arnott, and I think the installation is called Jump. And Ryan has actually also provided a little one sheet or broadside or newspaper, which is called Black and White and Red All Over. And, of course, black and white is the theme to his gallery installation. Because, I mean, everything's black or white. And, of course, when we visited the gallery last night, I don't think we found things to be quite as black and white as maybe Ryan is intuiting or, like, putting forth, you know.
Right. Well, you know, everything in the show is either black or white, but obviously, but for me, at any rate,
The meaning is not so cut and dry.
Yeah, it's, there's lots of gray areas in between everything where the connections start to happen, and there's a lot of questions, I think, that I had, you know, just going through the exhibition, trying to figure out what exactly was going on, or if I was supposed to try to do that. Do we have dates for Ryan's show and things like that, or did we just...
No, I think we're just going to tell people it's up for the month.
Right on. Okay.
We're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants today.
Yeah.
No, I've got his broadsheet in front of us here, but it doesn't really have the dates for the opening or the show.
Well, the opening...
Oh, no, sorry. I'm terribly mistaken. May 15th to June 21st at the Rosemont Art Gallery.
And the opening already happened?
Yeah, people were invited to meet the artists last Wednesday.
Okay.
In the evening, and Chris Riffle was there, and John Reichart, and Ryan Arnott.
Okay.
And I think it was pretty quiet, like the Cathedral Festival was on, so there are a lot of other arts events taking place last week. So, you know, a few people came out, and it was kind of nice. I kind of liked where we were going when we started talking about the gray shades of meaning, and I wanted to jump in and say that Ryan Arnott, for me, is always the artist. I kind of associate him with an invention that he did in the 80s, where he took a scissor and a plier apart, and he put the two halves together. So in one half, you've got the cutting surface going up against the gripping surface. And I think he had this on one of his opening cards, and my dad brought one home from the university and said, like, this is the tool of, you know, it's so functional and yet useless. And I think that's where Ryan's, like, I think his joy is in playing with those sort of symbols and putting them together in unexpected ways.
Right. So when I was reading the broadsheet and trying to figure out what was going on with the exhibition, that's one of the things that I definitely picked up on as well, is throughout the work there's a sense of push and pull, and sort of a play between what is our expectations for objects are, and what is actually happening. So,
I guess another famous example would be his bar of ivory soap,
right?
Where he's changed the word ivory into irony,
right? And then if you read the card, it's not actually soap; it's clay.
Yeah, it looks exactly like soap, but it's made out of clay. And he's made these bars of soap out of various materials. He's got one out of stone, which isn't on display because it's gray. Mm-hmm. He's just got his black and his white soap on display for the show.
Right. So, I mean, but you still get a sense of the kind of play that's happening between the objects, right? So, the broadsheet mentions Magritte as sort of an example, and the surrealists as people who would be closely connected to this kind of work. And I think that there's a pretty strong connection there in the way that he's playing these things out. Again, like he takes an object and he sort of pushes it in one direction, and then he turns around and tries to at the same time push it into another direction, as you know. And then you sort of have to try to situate yourself in it somewhere, so it becomes a very sort of awkward thing about not knowing exactly what is going on with the particular object you're looking at, like the salt and pepper shakers with the dice in them, right? So it's
because at first glance you just see the salt and the pepper because the dice are very, very small,
right?
And then when you get up closer, because these objects are placed in a vitrine and they beg to be examined more closely, you can see that he's got little tiny dice inside the shakers,
right? So like the idea of like a cup and dice in the cup and using the cup to shake them up, that works,
right?
And then the idea of the salt and pepper shakers with salt or pepper in them, that works. But then the combination of the two, I mean, both can sort of, you can imagine them working in your head, but for some reason it doesn't really, like it doesn't really work the way that you want it to, or that it should. And that's sort of very confusing.
Yeah, and I think that sort of harkens back to the scissor plier thing, right?
Right.
Like the both halves have a very strong meaning. And yet you put them together and they become non-functional. And yet, in an art gallery, every object is supposed to function in a meaning sense, right? Like, even though you can't cut paper or pick stuff up with the scissor plier, it still should function somehow meaningfully, right? Like the dice that we're talking about in the salt and pepper shaker. We're not going to season our food with numbers or dice. Or we're not going to get the dice to roll out and, you know, give us a combination of numbers to play a dice game.
Right.
But, you know, so how does this work then? It must function somehow on the level of meaning. And so what, like, is he seasoning his life? Are we talking about fate? Like, last night, we started talking about fate.
Yeah, somehow we got onto a conversation of fate. That was very strange.
But, you know, that the dice would somehow... I think it was because I remembered that Einstein had said that God does not play dice with the universe.
Right. And so, and then that's how we got into questions about fate and sort of what happens with people's lives and chance or non-chance and sort of the repercussions of that as well. But I mean,
so does that work for you with the piece, or is that just some sort of strange connection that I made?
Silence.
I don't know what's in your brain, Margaret. I'm sorry. No comment.
I think for me, I find the whole thing very, very strange, right? Like, I mean, the most intriguing part about this whole thing is again the methodology, right? So the idea of taking an object and putting a push pull on it and trying to sort of twist or have you.
I think play with your expectations.
Sort of. Like, it's kind of what that does, but it doesn't really at the same time, because it relies a lot on your expectations for it to resolve. And so it just sort of, like, it situates these things into a space that has no meaning, right? Or it does have a meaning, but it's so coded, so hidden, that I get a sense of it being there, but I cannot penetrate it. It's still just sort of like it's very dark.
It's very black.
Yes, I'm being kind of metaphoric here, because that's the only way to really describe the work. He He sets up these situation with these objects where a variety of things can happen or a variety of situations can be explored, and they're all very personal expectations or very personal stories, but he doesn't provide us the code for how to get involved with them, and nor does he provide us the background of how to enter them as well if it's a personal narrative. But nonetheless, because of the nature of the objects, they're very household objects, or they're sort of very plain things with just very domestic expectations to them. You get a sense of a story there, of a sense of something happening, and he's trying to play something out, but you're not sure what it is, and you don't have any way of entering it. So it's you're kind of left. It can be quite frustrating. You're kind of left out in the cold or in the black, right, and not knowing what's going on, and trying to get into it becomes very, very difficult.
Well, I think you can appreciate the objects on a very superficial level.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's something playful and fun about the irony soap.
Yeah.
But then if you try to penetrate things a bit farther to find like a more metaphorical level, it's difficult to get there.
Yeah.
And he's begging for that, I think, because at one point he has a map of Regina on the wall with the entire city limits like blacked out, and the rest of the map is whited out.
Yeah.
And the piece is called You Are Here. You know, and so, I mean, obviously there's something going on in his life. Like he's in Regina, like he's
right.
part of Regina.
Right.
And yet Regina is completely black. It's all one sort of homogeneous black place.
Right, and so he's making a very powerful statement there about Regina, you know, and about being in Regina. But the thing is, it's again, it's ambiguous in the nature of the statement. Like, is it a positive thing? Is it a negative thing? Like, what is it exactly that's going on? I don't know. I don't understand. Right. And because it's so impenetrable that's when people get frustrated and try to and get a little sort of weirded out about what exactly is going on. And then, you know, you get people who have, you know, it can be very, very frustrating. I'm not sure where I'm going with this in a lot of ways, but I guess that's that. Blah, it's not coming out the way I want to say.
Well, I mean, I think he actually provide the broadsheet to try to give a little bit of explanation about the work, but we know from talking to somebody else that this broadsheet is written by David Thompson, but it's in fact a friend of Ryan. So probably David and Ryan collaborated on this information. And for like the calendar piece and the map piece, he actually says Arnott's work reveals as it conceals, but he never says what it reveals. So yeah. He's not really interested in giving us extra clues.
No, and well, but again, you know, for me, that's like totally a frustrating experience. I'm not sure what to do about it or how to handle it. And I can appreciate the methodology, again, about trying to situate a space which puts us a little off guard in order to try to express something, and then leaving that something sort of a little ambiguous so that you don't quite get it right away and you have to sort of invest yourself a bit more into the work in order to get it. But the problem, again, lies in that it's so coded, so difficult to penetrate, like the blackness is so complete, right, that it becomes, it's just you know, again, another, it's just so frustrating to try to get into it, and so then I have to ask myself, well, is the meaning to the work that didactic, or is it that obvious, or is it going to be that metaphoric in that I should be able to understand it right away? And maybe it's not, maybe it's meant for me as a viewer to sort of just bring my own understanding of what I think the work is about, and then invest it with that sort of story. But even still, like that, there's it's so obvious. There's something else there on another level that is trying to come out, and you can feel it. You can sort of feel the edges of it when you start to think about it. But you can't penetrate it. You can't get into it. You know.
Well, I was about to point out that it was my assumption that postmodernism invited everyone to bring their own meaning to the art gallery.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, we can talk about the death of the author and you know, Roland Barthes' idea that no matter what kind of interpretation or what our intentions are as artists when we are creating a piece, all that information becomes not completely irrelevant. It becomes extraneous in a lot of ways, because really only the audience can understand the work. And they are going to interpret it from a particular way, their own way. So there's no point in trying to explain everything about the work, because it's only going to
it's going to mean different things to different people.
Yeah, because
they're coming to it from
exactly.
different backgrounds.
Exactly. Yeah. So that could be an idea that's starting to come up to the fore here in this work, and I could understand that, but the work isn't about that at the same time.
See, now I read the comment book, and someone put down, I think they wrote enthusiastically, the artist's mind, or we're inside the artist's mind. And I think the way that Arnott has taken over the Rosemont Art Gallery space, like, it's mm-hmm. quite unlike any other show I've been to there, right? Like, he's got these bars, like, of cloth hanging down over the door, and he's put up black curtains along the back wall, hiding the extra back door, and he's, you know, got styrofoam clouds hanging down from the ceiling. You really have the feeling that he's possessing this space and turning it into a stage.
Right.
And that you really are perhaps entering into the mind of Ryan Arnott.
Well, it is a stage. Like, the whole setup in the gallery is very theatrical, right? And you know that in some ways it's a little self-indulgent to do that, to set it up that way, because it implies it starts to set up that sort of personal narrative of the artist's mind, you know, right away. Like, you're entering into, like, the whole comment about entering into the artist's mind, like, that is what that's all about. And so in some ways it's a bit too much for me, because I feel like he's manipulating the situation and me by doing that a bit, and I can recognize it and I can see it for what it is, and so I get a little frustrated with dealing with that.
Well, my understanding of an installation is that you treat it as one artwork, right? That it's not a gallery space where you've got separate discrete artworks, but in fact it's a space that has been entirely transformed.
Right, right. It's
to come across with one meaning.
Right,
right. That
right.
you read it like a short story or a sentence, and it will all add up to one meaning.
Right, and I would add another layer to that particular definition of installation, and include that it's also dependent on the way that people move through the space. Right, so it's kind of like a sculpture, but in an inverted sense of it. So a sculpture is dependent on how people move around it,
mm-hmm.
whereas installations are dependent on the way people move through them. Right, and so he's recognized that. That's why he has, like, those cloth bars on the door, and the clouds with the shadows, and all that stuff is about how we move through that space.
Well, I think the shadows definitely make you aware that you're in a landscape. Right, a place that you move through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and he's playing with us there completely. So it's.
So then the question is, well, what does it add up to?
Okay, for those of you who cannot see what I'm doing, I'm like raising my hands because I don't know.
And when we went through the show, we actually know a little bit about Ryan Arnott's private life. And we kind of came to the conclusion that pieces in the show sort of add up to and talk a little bit about Ryan's private struggles.
Right.
And we just don't know enough about Ryan's life to read it as a point-to-point narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
Just I think he's was unhappy or is unhappy or was working through a struggle.
Who knows? Who knows? But I think that the metaphor of the bars on the door and the inside outside space that he's playing with, I think that is appropriate, because for me, and then the idea of surrealism, because for me the whole thing seems to be like an unconscious statement. If we can go a bit into psychoanalysis.
That would be legitimate, because surrealists really do depend on the unconscious.
Exactly. So like the whole installation that you're talking about, the relationship of the objects one to the other and to the viewer in the space, are set up in such a way that narrative about whatever it is in Ryan's life that he's talking about, and I would hate to speculate on what it is, he's trying to express it in some way, and that's what I was getting out of the work, is that I was trying to figure out what is that moment. And but again, it's so coded, it's so obscured, it's been blacked out like the map of Regina, that it becomes very difficult to figure out what any of that is. And he, you know, probably doesn't want to tell us point blank, or even.
Well, and in a way he does, actually, because in column 3 on the broadsheet, they've got a paragraph that discusses the religious content of these works may add new meaning to many others in the show. The themes of impurity, cleansing, being imprisoned, hanging, blood, and trinities realign themselves in our minds. For example, one could draw connections between the soap theme, oh, and the washing of the disciples' feet by Jesus. I don't really get that. But I was thinking about the soap and cleansing and purity and impurity and these sort of strong Christian themes of redemption and sin and, you know, cleansing,
yeah,
that somehow he's gone through a process. And I don't know if he's come out through the other side, but that he has issues that.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, is that you can sort of sense out a space in which he's trying to say something. You can feel the edges of it, and you can sort of pat them, and then you can tell there's a lump there, but you don't know what that lump is made out of, and you don't know what it is exactly. So he can talk about cleansing and Christianity and all that thing, but to what end? Like, what is he cleansing? Like, that is the question that the next step, like, it's not enough to cleanse. Like, what are you cleansing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the curious part for me. Like, it's, in the sense of I'm trying to remember the other objects very quickly in my head here, like the clothes hangers, right, which are obviously about men and women.
Well, and we should describe the pieces, right?
Yeah.
The clothes hangers have... I don't know if he's taken actual clothes hangers and bent them out, or if he's taken wire and completely replicated the top of the clothes hanger, but the bottom half echoes masculine and feminine clothing.
Right.
So there's like a suit, coat, and then it sort of tops up where the collar would be. It ends in a clothes hanger.
Right.
And then there's a woman's dress.
Yeah.
Is the second one. And then he's placed them on the wall on the same hooks, so the one goes on top of the other.
Yeah.
So making a relationship somehow between these. Like, are they a couple, or...
I don't know, you know, and again, like, it seems like there's so much personal narrative there, but he's talking about gender, he's talking about relationships in some ways, but again, you know, there's, I don't know what and to what end, like, that's the question that I end up going for.
And last night you made an interesting statement. You said that you found the work to be not metaphoric, but metonymic. And I always forget, like, metonym is one of your favorite words. But I always forget what it means.
It's symbolic in a versus, okay, it's symbolic versus ironic.
Okay, so what is a metonym?
Okay, so a metaphor is an ironic statement where one thing, you know, stands in for another, or you talk about one thing.
The moon
another.
Was a ghastly galleon.
Right, exactly.
You know, that it's not that it's like it, but that it is it.
Right.
You know that the moon isn't a ship, but, you know, the poet is
exactly
saying it is.
Yeah, so that's
that's a metaphor.
That's a metaphor. A metonym is an object that is symbolic of another object. So a flag is a metonymic of a country.
Okay.
Right, so it responds in a very significant and specific way.
So you're finding that the objects in the gallery are symbolically standing in for other things.
Exactly, yeah, and in some ways, right? Like, those were the connections that I was making. I could be totally off, but, you know, that's... I think that's kind of the beauty of this show, and the beauty of this kind of artistic practice, is that, you know, you could sort of speculate and try to figure out what those areas are about, and you can try to figure out what the work is about, or you cannot, and you'll never know. There's something really poetic and very nice about that, but at the same time, you know, it's super frustrating.
Right. And, I mean, if we think about the history of surrealism, there have been some very powerful pieces done over the years.
Right.
I mean, there's Merit Oppenheim's fur-lined teacup,
right,
which she made when she was like 17 years old in Switzerland, and there's just... I mean, you think about the teacup and picking it up and raising it to your lips and getting that fur in your mouth, you know? It's just like, ooh.
That's like finding the cat hair in your tea.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it just functions so well. And
right.
I don't know if anyone's ever actually tried to drink out of one of them. I know Mike Yoza made a fur-lined cup as part of the Flatlanders open house a couple weeks ago.
But definitely, I mean, we get into this idea, again, this idea of surrealism, right? And where things start to represent other things and other situations, right? Like, for, like the clothes hangers with the clothes, like, that's talking about a situation, right?
Yeah, or the, I mean, I always think in aphorisms, right? Clothes make the man.
Right. Yeah, and
so, you know,
right,
what?
And you can get into that metaphoric level and try to speculate about that way, but then quickly it becomes metonymic. Like, that's what I'm talking about, where it becomes symbolic for something else, right? Like, there's a particular situation and a particular time that is being referenced. We just have no access to what that is. If that makes sense.
Well, no, I was kind of wondering if you wanted to get deeper into that difference between the metaphor and the metonym. No. So is the metaphor like more accessible to people, and yet the metonym is more specific to a situation?
I would maybe not.
Because okay. If you didn't understand the codes of flags, for example, you wouldn't know what country the flag is representing.
Right, but at the same time, I mean, like. Very few people don't understand what a flag is and what a flag does, right?
Right.
So even like if we go to the shipyards, right, all the flags on ships have specific, they connote specific meanings, right? But it doesn't matter whether you know what those meanings are. You can understand that particular color of cloth attached in that particular way to a rope that's attached to a stick has a particular significance.
So you understand it as an object that has significance, even though you don't know what it means.
Exactly. Like you can, I mean, for a flag in particular, that would be the way it works. And so you can start to imagine like other things having that kind of connotation as well. Like a stop sign is a metonymic, you know, representation of something.
Whereas a metaphor, for it to function, you would have to know what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's more. I'm today's a bad day for talking for me. Oh my God, this is so hard.
Come on, Phil, yeah, we can do it.
I'm trying. A metaphor is definitely in a lot of ways more poetic, and it involves more of your imagination and trying to establish connections between things. Like, it's not nearly as direct in terms of making a point-to-point connection between things.
Now, here's a hard question. Can you think of a visual art metaphor?
A visual art metaphor?
Because all of my metaphors that are crowding into my head right now are all from literary sources.
Okay, now I'm stuck here. I had one in my head, I swear to God.
I'm thinking about the quilts that were done by Jasper Johns, like where the painting is a quilt and it's painted on. Would that be metaphorical?
Yeah, in some ways it could be metaphorical for all sorts of things. Judy Chicago's the dinner table project.
Oh yeah, definitely. So this was an installation where you've got a large banquet table in the shape of a triangle, and what Judy Chicago and her team of artisans did is put together place settings for all the women of history that they would have liked to have met.
Right, right.
And so each of the objects on the table was to represent that woman.
Yes.
And in some cases they were, you know, imaginary people, like a goddess.
Right.
And in other cases they would be other artists. Like, for instance, there was a Georgia O'Keeffe place setting which had a plate that resembled a Georgia O'Keeffe painting. And I guess you would know, like looking at this dinner table project, you would find, you know, Georgia O'Keeffe's place setting, and you would know that it stands in for Georgia O'Keeffe. Or,
right, yeah, in a lot of ways.
Which would be metonymic, so I've gone up the wrong tree.
Well,
maybe the whole thing is a metaphor, inviting all these women to dinner. And
there you go. See, there you go. Like, the place settings are metonymic, right?
Okay.
But the piece itself as an installation becomes metaphoric of the kinds of the strength of women, or, you know, like the idea of community and blah blah blah. Like that's the metaphoric level of the work. But the place settings themselves are metonymic of who's supposed to be sitting there.
Excellent. We did it.
This is so cool.
There,
we figured it out for everyone to see.
So how are we doing for time?
Oh, you know, we're out of time.
So once again, we invite people to come down to the Rosemont Art Gallery and take a look at some good art. And if you don't have time for the gallery, definitely go to the Free House and have some beers and check out Chris's work.
Right.
And we got a flyer in the mail advertising David Thauberger's work at Susan Whitney Gallery. And what else is happening? Oh, Neutral Ground has Paul Wong coming in
Friday, starting Friday.
Very important stuff. Yeah. So you can check the NutriGround website to find out more about it.
Yeah, and I just want to say one more thing about the show at the Rosemont. Like from the way that I was talking about it, for sure, it may seem impenetrable or it may seem very frustrating for someone to go down there and go there. But I think it's still worthwhile to go and see that and engage with it and try to figure out something for yourself. I mean, I would be very curious to hear what other people think about it, because I find that, again, you know, I find it really hard to figure out what is going on, but someone else may have a totally new idea. So it's a good conversation piece. So take someone with you and sit down and figure it. And
yeah, no, last night we had a third person in the gallery with us, and she was looking at the soap boxes that are sort of unfolded on the wall. And she goes, well, the boxes are like coffins. And, you know, that had never occurred to me. And I thought that was really cool. So once again, another interesting day of art. And it's Wednesday, not Friday, so we're starting our weekend early. Have a great week, everyone, and take care.
Yes, have a good weekend.